Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Yo, everybody, it's me.
Brian Brushwood.
Hello, you beautiful people.
So we're going to dive right into Westworld spoilers.
I'm kidding. God. Speculative spoilers. That'd be a great show where you you give a
next
recap show
of the show that's
before,
gonna
that's about to come out.
last Westworld thought, just here's the thing. Westworld for me has been worth it just because Brian has, for whatever reason, is dialed in on the zingers when it comes to Westworld. And I keep repeating them because I find them so funny. I will say without context or spoilers, the one line, yeah, if Chuck E. Cheese came to life and told me he was king of the pizza parlor, I guess I'd probably immediately cave and run him around too. And it'll be really amazing when that one mysterious character is revealed dramatically to be the player piano. Yeah.
I mean, let's just say what the rest of America is already wanting to express. Why did we get this instead of a Five Nights at Freddy's show?
Yeah, dude, Five Nights at Freddy's would be amazing, I'm sure.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
No more talk.
No, let's dive into, and there's going to be a more meta discussion about this, how awesome the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 trailer was.
Oh, my gosh. It hit on all the right points. It did exactly what it needed to do. It showed the characters in situations that we want to see them in. You know, the stars are Rocket and Groot. And with brief appearances, the Drax scene was, you know, he shows up for exactly two lines and they're perfect. And it's exactly what we wanted out of it.
Justin?
I mean, like, this is a trailer that just really knows exactly what kind of movie, we are assuming it knows what kind of movie it is and what we want it to be. Like, I think it just has such a beat on its own DNA that, man, I don't know. I mean, what can you even say? Like, this is going to be sci-fi thrills and chills and laugh a minute. Like, you know, it's so good.
I'm going to say, as a writer, what I loved about it was the fact that it gets it. The trailer is about the characters. It's about the characters. We don't know what the stakes are. We have no idea what that is because we kind of know in the end it doesn't matter. It's about the ride, and the ride is about the characters involved with it. And I think that's a key thing when it comes to storytelling, is that we're seeing the people we liked before, and now we're seeing where they are a little bit further along. And, you know, Rocket having to deal with, you know, being a dad to a little baby Groot, and what, you know, this is a guy you in storytelling, I tell people, like, your conflict, you want to take a character and say, what's the most interesting situation you can put them in? You know, you have this crotchety, grouchy little raccoon who's just upset at the world. Now he's got to take care of a little child.
Well, and I love the fact that it's a direct inversion of the dynamic from the first one. You know, it's like Groot was almost this overpowered character, this unfair Chewbacca level fix anything with all of his plant powers. And now it's the reverse. He's the mm-hmm. delicate little baby that has to be taken in this moment. You know, is so good.
And like with Drax, like you know, what I think, as we saw before, was the stoic warrior who now is really trying to get in touch with feelings and emotions and going the opposite way, where you're kind of like, we think we liked you when you were just stoic. I mean, it's great setup. It's great character arcs. And I think that's just what I love. The fact is the idea that it looks like, listen, the movie could complete garbage, but what we've seen from this trailer, the love for this trailer is because we're watching these characters we like in the way they interact. It's not this big, you know, not throw a bunch of there's tons of action in it, but it's the things we're talking about aren't the special effects. We're talking about the relationships.
Do we have a release date? Did they announce a release date?
Like May 17th? Yeah.
May 2017.
Oh, man. Good deal. Super excited.
Yeah, yeah, man. I mean, we get just 6 months after Star Wars, we get Guardians. And then 6 months after Guardians, we get.
I'll tell you what. So I had this thought. And spoiler alert, my pick for After Things is going to be Moana, because I enjoyed it immensely. And it occurs to me that in so many ways, the industrial nature of delight and surprise that Disney manufactures, it's as though they have industrialized myth explaining, or like they've deconstructed these heroes' journeys and figured out new spins on it. And on the one hand, you could say it's cold and calculating when, you know, at test screenings there, I'm making this up, but I assume they got cameras on people's faces and they're reading micro expressions of what registers at various moments or whatever. But on the other side, it's a sincere and important scientific pursuit that they are engaging in, and that they are figuring out what consistently delights and surprises the mind, what stories we want to hear, where we can see ourselves projected onto these characters in these situations.
You know, there is every studio, every system, every publisher, they have a process by how they think they make things better. The problem, as I've seen in many of these processes, is the goal, they all want the same goal. They want to make it better, but their process can often be so fundamentally flawed, they have no idea why these things don't turn out. And it's very easy for them to say, you know, the audience just weren't there for it. You know, sometimes these things just don't happen, or at least it made money. And it's frustrating because I hear those arguments and then I'm like, you know, you get Marvel's been killing it. Pixar's been killing it since Disney Animation, you know, kind of had their, you know, big change up. They've been killing it. We've got, you know, three examples of, you know, all in the same master studio that are doing an amazing job. Their hits are far better than their misses. And it's not just because of the IP they have. It's because they have a really good process. Things go in and come out better. Other systems, things go in and they come out worse because, one, you know, egos are involved and executives want to put their own stink on something, or they want to change stuff, or they want to deal with. I've seen this happen, you know, where, you know, there is the goal. Everybody says they want to make something great, but they don't know how to make it great. And then they do a dumb thing to make it better, and they don't know why it did not work. So I would say that, you know, what we know, the reason Pixar's worked is because Pixar has a story team. You know, they have a team that their job is, and they're people who are qualified to be there and to say, this is how we try to work with this. Let's work with the director and the writers to make this better. They have a process starting at the script and how to improve it, then doing sort of little sketches. They would take their storylines to kids and tell them the stories just in drawing form to see if the kids followed and got it. With Marvel, they made a lot of mistakes early on with their IP and all that and development stuff. And Kevin Feige said, you know, we need to have a better path to do this. And as he became more sophisticated on what made for good stories, they would do stuff. You know, we know, you know, from behind the scenes stuff, like on Doctor Strange, there were people there are more names attached to that. There are more names involved in that script than you'll see up on the screen who the script was just given to for them to say, how can we make this better? What would you polish or put in this? You know, they do that, you know, and it's a, you know, pretty impressive sort of thing.
There was this great moment. I was lucky enough to go take a tour of Pixar, and it's just a brilliant place because you have all these people that want to come to this campus because Pixar obviously is kind of this company that means something, right? But they are also intensely secretive, so they don't just want people like, you know, oh, you invited your aunt. We just want her just walking by looking over people's shoulders to see what they're working on. So they just make this little mini museum to whatever the newest movie that they came out with, and they'll have all their early models and they'll have all their little sketches and everything. And they do just such a museum quality, great job. But one of the things that I was so impressed with was they just had this wall and it was all just single panel sketches of gags that they just, as the movie is kind of in its process, and Brave was what was out when I was there, they just then go to the writers and they're like, yeah, let's now just, for all the dead moments, let's just think of a million gags, whether or not they work. Let's just draw them out so we get a visual sense of what they would look like, and maybe one or two make the movie. But it's like, that's that writer commitment to be like, okay, not only are we telling a story, we're telling a kid's story. And, you know, instead of just kind of taking the easy way out that, like, you see in a lot of kids' movies where, you know, it's, you know, a character farts or falls down or something like that for no reason, just because you got to have those to keep kids interested. Let's try to do something that makes sense and fits the story or reinforces a little character trait. It's just such a commitment to detail that even their like their throwaway gags need to tie back to what the story they're telling is.
Yeah, I guess, and I shudder to even place this property in the same category as Pixar. But recently we talked about how over the last week, The Modern Rogue has really exploded on YouTube. And I've thought a lot about like, OK, what is it that's working? And I think part of it is this cold open. I realized after the fact that on this property, we don't waste any time saying, hi, I'm Brian. Hi, I'm Jason. And this is The Modern Rogue or whatever. Instead, we begin in the middle of a conversation. And within 5 seconds, you get a laugh or at least an attempt at a laugh.
They're funny looking.
Yeah. No, yes, exactly like that. And then you jump right into the story, but you immediately get that promise. I don't know. There's something about that that ability to. So those opening bits, we will record like 7 of them, and then Brant will just figure out which one hit the best. And sometimes mm-hmm. none of them hit, and instead he takes a moment from the end and sets it up as kind of a foreshadowing thing.
And that's a great point, is that if you want to make something great is, you know, you go up to bat as many times as you can. You make as many attempts as you can, and then you choose the best. You cut out the fat, choose what's best, then go in there and figure out how to make it tighter. And Pixar, like, you know, Justin talked about, they have that process they call plussing. They think this is good, but they're like, how can we get more out of this? How can we make this even better, which also increases your rewatchability on that. And Brian, like, yeah, you're like, you can say, well, here's a format that people use for these shows. Maybe that format isn't perfect. Maybe we can tweak that format and improve the information and the entertainment density of it, which is always what you want to do. I know as a writer, my goal is I have to, one, get rid of what's not really helping the story. And then what I does work is try to make that as dense as I can, as far as in a good way, is just making it feel like every sentence matters. And that's hard because a lot of times people are just, you know, it drives me nuts. You talk to magicians, people are like, oh yeah, I love this bit. It kills 10 minutes. It's like, yeah, it killed that 10 minutes. All right. And people, you know, sometimes it can be challenging because you're trying to, you know, tell stories or do stuff and you don't have enough time to do that. But if you're a writer, have a process. Like I talk about this before, have a process to make things better. And, you know, Brian has his process and brings in, you take your ego out of it and Jason's ego out of it, and you let somebody else come in and say, this is best. This, I think I have a closer idea of what the audience is going to like versus you guys. And you let them make that decision.
Yeah. Well, and that's a tough thing to do, man. Everyone wants to, you know, but it's my story and I want to tell it the way I want to, blah, 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 blah. It's like, that's great. But you have to decide what you care about more, having it be exactly the way you pictured it or having it be universally beloved and very popular.
Mm-hmm. So takeaways are, listen, I've said this before, Doctor Strange is the 14th Marvel Comics movie, the 14th movie in the MCU, rather, the 14th, and it's got like a 90 or 91% Rotten Tomato score.
It's also the highest grossing single character movie in the Marvel, in the MCU.
Over 600 million. Iron Man.
What did Iron Man end up at?
Here's
Iron Man did 585. And it looks like Doctor 587.
Yeah, internationally, but yeah, domestic. But yeah. It was Doctor Strange did wonderfully domestic. I mean, internationally. So yeah, but so yes, overall, absolutely correct.
Well, and it looks like domestic is probably going to outgross Fantastic Beasts, which I don't think a lot of people would have necessarily seen coming when those movies were announced.
That's a fascinating sort of thing there too, that. Where the difference is between, what Fantastic Beasts has been doing versus what we were kind of expecting that would do.
Yeah, the problem is, we talked about the importance of characters and all the marketing. I still can't tell you what Fantastic Beasts is about or who the characters are. I know there's two guys, I think, and the star has been, it's the Wizarding World again. Don't you love
Brian,
the Wizarding World?
Have you seen it?
No.
It still won't be clear to you.
Okay, all right, great.
I think it's not a bad movie, and not at all. And it is, it's got charm to it, but it is a movie where you're trying to figure out who the protagonist, you know, is not clear to me. But you know, it's also, it's difficult to sort of like, you know, mark out new territory. And the thing I would say about Fantastic Beasts is sort of thing I would say to about where Star Wars is going is, if we go back and we look at early, you know, when Iron Man was a movie that hit really, really well, same year, same time frame, we had Incredible Hulk movie, which was good but not great, and not one that we really, you know, spend a lot of time talking about and as great chapters of the MCU. But they got better. They started batting better. They started getting better and better and better as they built out their team and they figured out how to tell these stories. Star Wars is just starting out from there. You know, they're just starting out figuring that out, but I'm confident that those are going to get tighter and tighter and better because I think Kathleen Kennedy is brilliant. I think she's going to pull together the best team she can do that. And with Fantastic Beasts, I have a feeling it's going to be, they're going to start building upon what works and it's going to get tighter and tighter and tighter and more clear. I hope, you know.
So,
not even though it's Warner Brothers and they don't have a track record for that.
28 minutes of Rogue One screened over the weekend to very positive reviews. What are our expectations
for Rogue One? This is what's great, is I have none. My expectation is I'm going to get to see a decent heist movie that takes place in the Star Wars universe. That's all I care. I don't care. I ain't looking for a single character. I'm just looking for rad stuff happening, man. Whereas like there's no weight of, oh, the legacy and the transition and will you be able to pull off what this is, the lightest, popcorniest, most relaxed I'm ever gonna be or have ever been since I was a kid to see a Star Wars movie.
I'm with you 100%, except I do have one thing that I feel like the movie will be defined on. And it's gonna be the Darth Vader scene that everybody will be talking about. And I'm assuming that there is one. I'm assuming there's just going to be that one scene where everyone's just going to be like, damn, Darth Vader did something cold, something brutal. Like, I expect that to be in the movie. If there is not something that scratches that itch in the movie, I will be disappointed a little bit.
That's interesting because in principle, that's the thing I'm least excited about, but I guarantee you, or I strongly would wager that once it happens, I'll be like, that was a great scene. I'm so glad we saw Darth Vader.
I'm having mixed feelings about managing my expectations. Everything you said, Brian, about what you know, just have it be that, I intellectually agree with. Emotionally, and that's what I think we kind of said with Force Awakens, and that's what I kind of like when a Force Awakens, like, I just want a well-told thing, blah blah blah, and then I walk, I'm like, well, that was sort of silly, that was sort of what kind of annoyed me about Star Trek, and he brought that here and this kind of thing, and I could explain all that away, but I don't like to be in a movie where I have to explain stuff and say, no, this makes sense because of this, you know. Ideally it wants to be there on the page or on the screen, and so I just want a tight, cool, you know, heist thing that, you know, and part of the strength of that's going to be like, and you go back to those World War II heist movies is, we know that we won World War II. You know, we know that. And people are like, oh, why would you do a movie about this? Because we all know how Star Wars ends. Like, yeah, we know how World War II ended because we're not, you know, Zeke hailing to the Nazi flag, but World War II movies are an amazing genre.
Most of us are not Zeke hailing in Journey Quest.
Yeah. For those of you who only listen to After Things, please see Journey Quest on Weird Things for context. And I love, like, I just sort of love that, like, the idea that we're entering this era where, you know, our war movies are about Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh my God. That's, I was talking with Andrew. I'm like, man, part of me just really wants Rogue One to be 4 hours long and just scored by the Doors and just be like the Vietnam, you know, movies that are like as ponderous as that genre could get, you know, just long lingering shots and just, oh God,
burying bodies for mass graves, dude. And stuff.
Watching, you know, Grand Moff Tarkin sitting there eating at a cut of roast beef while he's explaining, you know, the defensive perimeter for the Battlestar to, you know, beleaguered, you know, Imperial officer and stuff. Long, long scenes of driving through, you know, swamps on Dagobah and just characters going crazy.
Somebody dying, choking in the mud.
Yeah, exactly. Like, are you in a, you know, just gosh.
Good morning, Tatooine.
Yeah, sand people throwing spears and stuff at them as they go along, and you know, are you an Athathan or are you merely a probe droid here to deliver a message?
God, I mean, I don't know. There's just like the idea of taking the restrictor plate off the Star Wars universe, and really, I mean, like, let's say what it is. It's extended universe. It's what we loved about the extended universe. Yep. Now they make movies about them and they call them official things.
Yep. And, right? And as painful as it was at the time, I was not a fan of them wiping away the entire EU, but I'm glad they did, because now all of a sudden we have a blank slate and any story is possible, man.
Including the ones that they wiped away. That, yeah. Like, it's well, like, oh, no, now this is real.
Right,
now
we're seeing with Grand Admiral Thrawn showing up in Rebels. Like, all of a sudden, it's like that, you know, the most iconic, mm-hmm. best character in all of the expanded universe. Suddenly, they're like, oh, guess who's here? Ah!
So my hope that as they try to look for ways to how do you extend the franchise beyond sort of the core storyline is, you know, they go deep, way, way, way back to the Old Republic, and we get our Game of Thrones, Star Wars sort of thing, where it's fewer planets, massive castles, and more medieval sort of with spaceship kind of thing, you know, facing some other enemy besides the Empire. I'd love that, because it'd be a totally different look and feel, yet still, you know, spitty lightsabers show up periodically and angry robots and stuff. Like, there's so many places they could go in that gap. I mean, it was brilliant of Disney to buy it, because they understood everything they were getting, all the directions they could go with it. And I'm eager to see them go way outside of the time frame they're in right now.
Agreed. And plus there's a rich, you know, some of the best content shows up in the video game. Knights of the Old Republic was phenomenal. Both one, I never finished two, but the world building that they did and the way they changed the world, the worlds where they made the Sith an entire race that had a lot of the trappings of what we think of as the classic empire versus the Old Republic. It was very cool.
Well, but really, that illustrates something that we knew, right, from the EU, that you can tell great stories with these characters and with these themes. You know, the themes are universal enough that you can draw a million different versions of it, right? And the iconography is so indelible that you can always have a new reason why somebody uses the Force or somebody has to make a decision about their life. Like, it's just so good.
Yeah. I kind of think that Star Wars is the most interesting, the further away it gets away from Jedi's.
Oh, absolutely agreed. Like the patchwork quilt of different civilizations, societies, you know, you bring in alien races that could do anything. Like to me, it's like, I liked the way the first movie treated Jedi. It's like a kooky, forgotten, crazy religious zealous sect that maybe had some cool tricks they could do.
Yeah. Somebody in there pointed out that we didn't criticize Marvel from getting away from the comics, but we did initially. You know, when there was talk about the MCU and we heard about like the origins, and the origins were going to be different than the latest iteration, our favorite iteration of these comic book characters, there was grumbling about that, but Marvel had to state, listen, the MCU, we're going to call it the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Everything is true within these stories, and they're going to be consistent for the best part, but we're not, it's not going to be, you know, the line of, what was the kind of where they did the reimagined Marvel Ultimates. You know, it wasn't going to be like trying to do that. It wasn't going to be this, you know, it'll be this line or that. Like, no, we're going to let gifted storytellers come in there, because you know, listening to the and this will be a pick again, I guess, the Marvel Comics, The Untold Stories, so many of these storylines were just thrown together last minute and then ad hoc justified later on, that, you know, when you have the chance to take a breath and say, let's develop a really good storyline for Spider-Man, for Iron Man, for Doctor Strange, for Thor, you know, like with Thor, it's like, all right, is he going to be Blake? You know, is he going to have this thing with the stick he hits and he turns into Thor, or are we just going to have Thor be Thor, you know, and they had to make choices, and I think the choices they've made for the most part have been fantastic. And so now Star Wars, it's like, yeah, like that's why when they did the reset, I was like, yes, this is great, because they will do things like pull in Thrawn. They will pull in stuff that's cool. But then instead of trying to adhere to some book that was written hastily in 30 days, you know, they will.
Nowadays, I think we have the language for it better than we did. The language they used is like, the only things that are canon are this. And you know, that felt really disrespectful to folks who had become invested in the books like me. Whereas I think if they had said the same sentiment, where it's just like the books exist in their own universe, this is, you know, the movies exist in their own universe. But then again, that gets a little problematic when you're literally dealing with a galaxy. We're like, wait, so is there a multiverse and there's different versions? But
also a lot of that love for the EU, I think, was born from the troubled relationship that fandom had with George Lucas.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That it was like, even when George Lucas was making new Star Wars, there was this sense that he was telling, and even now, I mean, he's telling personal stories, right? I want to do this. This is a personal thing. I make these personal decisions. I don't want to be affected by the outside world, yada, yada, yada.
And only so, for me. I'm never going to show them to anybody.
Exactly. And so it was like, oh, okay, well, I have to, like, you know, as a fan, if I want to be plugged into this world, then I've got to support the things that are done independently. If he's going to carve out this little area that we can do our own stuff, then, like, I want to support it. I want to buy the books. I want to talk about how great they are. I want to connect with people on them. And now it's like Star Wars had to have that, you know, Kathleen Kennedy had to have that one weird moment where it was just like, guys, don't worry. We're here for you. We are going to give you good Star Wars stories, you know? And even if maybe they aren't fantastic, we'll tell another one, or we'll get a new director, or we'll get a new writer. I mean, listen, I don't think anybody, I thought Thor the Dark World was an enjoyable movie, but, you know, it's certainly going to probably rank on the lower end of if I'm, you know, gun to my head, going to rank all the Marvel movies. But yet I'm thrilled for Thor 3. Because I think that they knocked it out of the park with, you know, what they're looking at for the storyline and the director. So it's like now there's faith in the brand as a whole. And that is something that I think we are, especially if Rogue One is good, now we kind of have again in Star Wars, is just like, let's just trust the brand to tell our stories and not this like weird subdivision inside of it that's kind of acknowledged but not acknowledged by the, you know, weird despot, who, the warlord who runs it.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm not worried. And I said this when Disney first bought Star Wars, was that at that point, even looking at how well Marvel Comics managed, like, I'm not worried that it's because people have this fear, like, that, you know, what if they did a sucky movie and then they just drop it, like, you know, Trek or whatever. I'm like, Trek, the problem with Trek was that nobody had ownership on that. You know, it was a studio property, and then they bring in different people from time to time to try to, like, what can you, and that was like the problem with the Muppets, is you bring, like, well, I'll take a stab at it. Where, you know, Pixar has, you know, John Lasseter, you know, has the other principals of this, of Pixar heavily involved, where that is their baby and they want to make sure that this succeeds. Ed Catmull running the company. You know, these are people that are very committed to, like, we know what this is. We have a clear idea what we're going to do. Marvel, primarily Kevin Feige, who's like, I have a clear idea where we want to go. This, you know, what is and what is not. And he has good taste. Kathleen Kennedy has a good track record. You know, she has to deal with, you know, all the other things of making Disney happy. And hopefully, you know, she'll have the opportunity to pick and choose and to build a good Star Wars team. And I would say that there is evidence that some of the people they pulled in who then left and all that. And it's still, I think we're still in the early stages of figuring out what is a good Star Wars story team. Because I think that some of the people that were pulled into the initial sort of discussions, I've been privy to other franchises they've been involved with and heard they've had some of the dumbest ideas possible. So, you know, that we'll see. They got to form that. But I think that they will. Disney knows what the formula is. They understand what it is. And they may not be there yet, but they'll get there.
Yeah.
It won't go away.
Do you guys have any picks? I already called dibs on Moana. It's real, real good. I look forward to watching it again, so I can find out what happened during all the parts I wasn't crying constantly. Because, like, the opening scene, I go with my kids, and the opening scene is with a Cali-aged Moana, and then smash cut to her growing up through Josie-aged Moana to become Penelope-aged Moana, and then her dad, who's the chief, spends his whole time saying, please don't leave the island. It's dangerous out there. And then she leaves him and adventures happen and she becomes strong and stuff. It's great. It's great. I think it might be the most unquestionably feminist movie Disney's put out. because even though Zootopia had a female protagonist, it was really that was mainly about race. It's great. Every guy in Moana is an idiot.
Oh, that's how you tell a good feminist story now, Brian.
No. I mean, that is a factual. It's just fun. It's fun to see her be many of the tropes of Disney films of the past get turned on their ear, I guess, is what the way I'd put it.
Yeah, it sounds good. Everybody's just talking universally how much they love it, which sounds awesome.
Yeah, you know, which is interesting because it seems to have like the most sort of esoteric sort of feel to it. Like when I look at the previews and everything, it just seems like, there's like, big grand adventure, right? Beyond that, there's not really like...
Well, and then it's all based on Polynesian mythology. Like, this is not a shared thing that we all know. Most of us didn't study this stuff. It's not like, you know, I know who Thor is. I know who Zeus is. Hercules, yeah. It's great, though. Also, Jemaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords shows up and does a fantastic Bowie as the Goblin King impression for his section.
My pick, and I mentioned this before, is... There is, I mentioned that the Marvel Comics, The Untold Story, which is, it's more of a, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Gangs of New York, and then you picked up the book Gangs of New York, and you realize Gangs of New York, the book, is literally like an encyclopedia describing you each of the gangs of New York. There's not a storyline to this.
Right.
This is sort of the history of Marvel Comics, kind of like, this year this happens, you know, this character was introduced and Stanley had no idea when he was asked about it by college students, you know, and this character, you know, this thing happens that. So it's a very good play-by-play kind of watching this sort of brand evolve and develop over time and sort of the grievances and stuff and have that. And I don't say that it puts it into the most positive light. You know, if you grew up reading, you know, Stan's bullpen and all that, it's going to quickly demolish, you know, that sort of mythology of that, but you understand why that was there. And you still, you know, you realize the reverence Stanley had for it, the brand. And so it's just kind of an interesting scene where things, you know, made. I'm in the early 80s period right now, which is, you know, kind of, it's, you know, a very fascinating phase for that. And, you know, and you get into sort of side stories, like, you know, what happened to, was it, you know, Schuster, you know, one of the guys who, the guys who created Superman, and what happened after that, you know, and you find out, you know, one of them ended up being just a proofreader at Marvel Comics.
Wow.
You know, like over in the corner there, proofreading and tried writing comics, but his comic books were just two decades behind in what people wanted. And you're like, wow, you know, that's a very interesting. So that would be my pick. Then the other one was there was the Comic Wars, I think, which was a really good discussion of like in the 90s, what happened with Marvel Comics and how it was almost going to be, you know, sold off and whatever. And one of the big things that changed, and they have not got into this yet in the book, but I had the pleasure of meeting Tom DeSanto, who was the producer of X-Men, who Tom is probably largely the guy that saved, if you want to say one person who kind of saved Marvel Comics, overall, may have been Tom DeSanto, because if the X-Men movie had flopped, Sony was not going to do their Spider-Man. Marvel was probably going to just sell off all the characters individually forever, and you would not have had the value you had in a, you know, company like Disney coming along, or Marvel building up the MCU and then Disney acquiring it and doing what they did. And so it was certainly separate from Marvel proper, but that was, the X-Men was this movie that showed that you could have gravitas. You could open up with a scene at Auschwitz, you know,
yeah,
and carry a movie and give it this weight and depth and doing a really, really great story for that. So it's a very interesting thing about how something almost wasn't.
Wow.
Comic Wars will be my pick as well. I love that book. It is so well researched. It is the best of what nonfiction can be, especially on what is ostensibly like very, 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 very dry and boring, like bankruptcy proceedings, which is really the front lines in which these battles are fought. And just another name that tends to get thrown around now, I think, for political reasons. But Ike Pretermueller is apparently a legendarily difficult person to be around. However, if it is not for him, then Marvel was him stepping in that allowed Marvel not to be sold off for parts. at the moment of greatest need. And there's no way that we get these stories in the way that we're getting them now without him.
There you have it, gentlemen. It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.